Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should check out in yours. I'm Drew, one of your hosts, and I'm here with the host, Zakiel.
What's going on, everybody? This is our Shadows over Innistrad set review. The sequel to one of the most beloved sets of, what would you say, maybe the past 10 years?
Easily the past 10 years, probably. I mean, it's up there all time, especially in that limited draft, but flavor-wise, it's probably top two or three of all time.
I'm super excited for the show. You know, we're doing this after pre-release. I think everyone's kind of got a little bit of taste of the cards and see how they go. And of course, I've been able to sit down. I got one draft in. I was pretty impressed with some stuff. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. But before we get into all of that, just a quick update like we always do. What have you been up to in terms of Cube, in terms of outside life? Any new crazy stuff happening?
Let me see.
I know you got a pretty crazy pickup.
I got a few pretty good ones, I suppose. I got a moat, which I don't think we talked about last time. You see, what else was it? I got a full opposition and a pack full Kiki Jiki. Oh, and a time walk.
just a time walk.
Just time. Maybe. Nice. I was really happy to pick it up. Actually, there was a raffle for it, like $10 chances, and I got three chances of like 150, 160, and just, you know, one timed it. So my $30 time walk is in the cube now.
That's awesome. That is so much fun. I haven't had too much stuff coming in. I was able to snag a metal worker for my local shop for like $70, just because they had it on the low and they were like, you know, you shop here a lot, so we'll hook you up. And I was like, okay, good time.
Yeah, I saw that post. I was like, what? Did they know it all?
Good time is definitely there, but I'm starting to kind of look into the expeditions just because now that the steam has kind of cooled off, everybody's kind of moving past that set. There's a lot of expeditions out there that are really just sitting. You know, the price has fallen and there isn't too much of a premium on them anymore because they're, I'm not going to say necessarily common, but they're more common than I think more people anticipated. Or maybe that there was just a billion boxes of Zendikar block opened up and that's why there's so many.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of people that are collecting like all 45 or whatnot. But I think one of the big things was it wasn't that a lot were open, but that a lot were opened by people that would rather turn it into like half a modern deck, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why they're kind of available. They'll eventually get in the collector's hands before too long, but yeah, now's probably the time to be looking for those if you're interested in them.
Mm-hmm. So did you get to do pre-release of, SOR?
Did not. Didn't open up my first pack until, release day.
Yes, as did I. I was not able to make it, but I heard some crazy stuff, and we were able to, you know, kind of tune in onto the blogs and see what everybody liked. So I think we should probably just jump in here, Shadows over Innistrad. Where do you want to start off?
Well, we always start off with white. Let's go backwards. Let's start with green.
Sure.
There's some good stuff there. Turns out that clues are actually pretty good. I wasn't sure about them, but especially if you're in a color that doesn't have a lot of draw, you know, like green can be or something like that, they really help out.
Mm-hmm.
But like the one card that really stood out for me that I didn't even notice beforehand was Tireless Tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's basically got landfall. They don't call it landfall. It's a 2 and a green for a 3/2, which is a pretty good rate right there. But it says whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you investigate, which, you know, you put a clue token in and you can sack it for 2 mana to draw a card. But on the bottom line of text, it says whenever you sacrifice a clue, you put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker. So he's, you know, every time you're just playing lands, he's going to eventually draw you cards and just get bigger. So pretty good threat that does, you know, a lot more things, but it was an intro pack rare, so just a lot of people overlooked it.
I think one of the key words on there is one of the key things about the card is it says whenever you sacrifice a clue. So if you may have something like Pura and Kin Nalar kind of thing where you can sack an artifact, I think that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of, you know, kind of some small combos in there, but yeah, that's a pretty sweet card. It reminds me of what is the card that just came out last set? Sylvan, the guy that gets like plus three if you have six land. Doesn't matter. But yeah, just that kind of, you know, slightly mid-range kind of aggressive decks that are in green, that's definitely pretty sweet. And just a quick overcap before we get completely in here, we're just going to talk about basically the cards that we like in this set. You know, in some of the past set reviews, we've gone over every single rare and every single common, and it's nice, but, you know, we start talking about cards that I think most people just aren't really interested in, and a lot of the feedback that we've got just says to kind of talk about the more popular cards and maybe some ones in between. So we're just going to do that. But with that said, my favorite green card is actually an uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
It is called Duskwatch Recruiter. It's a 2-2 for 2. It has the ability, two colorless and a green. Look at the top three cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And then it has the Werewolf Claws. At the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells are cast, you can transform it. Which transforms into Crowlin Horde Howler. Creature spells you cast cost one less to cast. At the beginning of each upkeep, you can flip it back. So this card's insane because the mana sync ability is repeatable. You know, mm-hmm. in the mid or late game, when you may not have too much going on, it's essentially like look at the top three and find a creature. So you can do that. You know, if you have just this in play and you're kind of at a board stall, or maybe you're trying to find a way to deal with some spirit tokens or something, if you spend a whole turn doing this and are able to pick up, you know, maybe one or two creatures, that's, you've gone through essentially, you know, 6 to 9 cards, depending on how many times you've activated. It's pretty good, especially in green, where I'm assuming you're probably going to be running a higher amount of creatures than probably any other color.
Yeah, the big thing about it is, you know, being a werewolf, it wants you to not play spells, so it'll flip. Mm-hmm. But it gives you a mana sink that lets you do a spell-like ability that doesn't count. So, you know, you untap with it on three, bash in for two probably if it's if it's open, and then you just pass the turn and or you can actually activate it before you pass, whatever. Mm-hmm. But once you pass the turn, it's going to flip, and whatever you did get out of that top three on your next turn, it's going to be cheaper. It's going to be one less to cast. So it does both things very well, I think.
Yeah, I am definitely super excited. This card seems awesome. Any other green cards?
I'm kind of torn on Traverse the Uvenwald.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you pronounce it. But basically, it can fix your mana. It's one green sorcery. Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it in your hand. Which isn't great, but it's not horrible. You know, it's going to fix your mana if you're in a 3-color deck or splashing for something else. But the key is it's got Delirium, where if there are 4 more card types in your graveyard, instead of searching for a land, you can search for a creature card or a land card. It doesn't say basic anymore. It just says or land card. Reveal it and put it into your hand. So it becomes part Sylvan Scrying, part Worldly Tutor. So it is sorcery still, but mm-hmm. You know, green, that's pretty good flexibility. Like the basement on this is pretty high, and the upside is, you know, could definitely be good there.
Mm-hmm. And we did get, you know, another Hydra in Uvenwald Hydra, 4 colorless and 2 green for Star. It has reach, and its power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for a land and put it onto the battlefield tapped. So I guess this is quote unquote a fixed Primeval Titan. Maybe.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I would probably just rather have the Primordial that gets you a forest and nukes one of their lands. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 7 mana, but that card also has reach, and I don't know. It's not the worst thing. I'm sure it'll see play in standard, but I don't know. I'm thinking I like the, what was the commander card that just came out? Great Oak Guardian.
Yeah, that card is sweet.
Yeah, it's very sweet. So, you know, if I'm going to run a couple 6-drops in green, I think the Hydra's probably 3rd or 4th place right now, so. If you don't have prime time or something like that, it'd probably be a decent replacement, but it's not something I'm jumping overjoyed for.
Mm-hmm. And actually, just to give some of the listeners context, what is your cube? What is the size of your cube, the design parameters that you have on it, just so we can kind of know that as we're going over each of these cards?
Well, it's mine's right at 600. I haven't added all the Shadows cards yet, but it's between 6 and like 610. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not powered per se. I don't have all the power 9, of course, but it's got pretty much everything else, from Mind Twist, Talarian Academy, Soul Ring, Wheel of Fortune, Guy's Cradle, you know, all the strongest cards throughout the history, but, I have a couple of art types I like in particular.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and my cube is, I think I just updated on Cube Tutor. It's just at 500 cards. It's a semi-powered list. Well, it's technically powered, but my playgroup, depending on the day, we're just like, we may scrap the power and maybe like Soul Ring just because we don't want to deal with that. But my list is slightly smaller. I tried to keep it at 450, but I thought the card pool was a little bit too small for me personally. So it just mm-hmm. went up to 500, and I think that's the range that I'm probably going to keep it at. But, you know, give or take a little bit.
Yeah, I would probably need to cut mine down some, but it's weird. We either have like 6 people drafting or like 12. So the 600 is, you know, coming in handy a little bit more. I would like to cut it down to 540, but just be so hard. There's so many good cards that I like. So.
All right. I think that is it for green. I didn't see anything. Maybe I'm wrong.
No. Well, I got to draft last week. And, of course, it's just like through rose-tinted glasses of how it worked in Innistrad Draft. But there's a card called, I can speak, I promise, Pack Guardian. And if it wasn't 2/2 green, and that wasn't like the strongest section of green, it's a great card. It's got flash, 2/2 green for 4/3. It's a wolf spirit, not that that matters a ton. But when you cast it, you can discard a card and then you get a 2/2 wolf token. So you pay 4 mana at instant speed, you get 6 power across 2 bodies, and it's a discard outlet, like say if you have Reanimator or you just have extra lands or whatever. So it's just the blow up potential is pretty big. Mm-hmm. Like I say, it might not be strong enough for, you know, some of the higher end type cubes, but, it's something to look at. You might want to play test it, see what you think.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think the next color here is red.
Mm-hmm.
Red has some really cool cards. There's one card I'm incredibly excited for, and that is the new one drop that we got, Falconwrath Gorger. 1 red mana for 2/1. Each vampire creature you own that isn't on the battlefield has madness. The madness cost is equal to its mana cost. The interesting thing about this card is that's it. There's no drawback. There's no, you know, take damage. If it takes damage, there's nothing. It's just a 2/1 for 1 with upside. So I'm incredibly excited for this. It's going to be finally my replacement for Jackalpup. Jackalpup probably doesn't need to go, but my playgroup especially doesn't like it, so they've been wanting it to go for like 2 years now. But you know, this card's awesome. It's 2/1 for 1, of course, and it does have some splash. There are a number of vampires in cube, especially after the set, that you can possibly, you know, get madness on. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, red finally got their elite vanguard. With some tribal synergies, I guess.
But, yeah.
It's a good card. Like, I think, you know, that's what you want in your red aggressive one drop. You know, they can't all be goblin guide, but this is just solid. And like you said, there are quite a few vampires running around in either red or black that are, you know, pretty cheaply costed. So if you have a discard outlet, you can just put them out there at instant speed for whatever their cost is. So
I was able to play this once in a cube draft. Well, not me personally, but I was able to play against my friend who was drafting, and he had Liliana of the Veil. So he, on turn 3, played Lily, and then, of course, he, you know, does whatever it was. And on turn 4, he discards, I can't remember if it was, I think it was Olivia Voldaren. I think he just did it really for show, but it was double value, which he could play the card that he discarded, so he actually wasn't down on cards with Liliana, which, of course, made me be down one card in comparison to him and have to deal with this creature. Mm-hmm. So I was really impressed, you know, more than just the body, but that occasional value is pretty good.
Yeah, there's actually like 3 really good red one drops in this set. One that's kind of iffy is Skin Invasion. Have you seen this, The Enchantment?
Mm-hmm, I have.
The kicker is you can put it on their creature, and it says enchanted creature attacks each combat if able, but when it dies, you return it to the battle, you return Skin Invasion to the battlefield, transform under your control, and it's a 3/4 insect horror on the other side. So, you know, say they've got like a good creature, playing defense, but you've got something that could kill it, you slap this on it, it has to attack, you basically eat it, and then you get to bring this back flipped, and when you untap, it's, you know, no longer summoning six, so you got a 3/4 for one mana, basically, and got to kind of make them attack when they didn't want to. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of things going on.
Nice. There is another one drop, too. Do you mm-hmm. want to go over them?
Oh, yeah, it's Village Messenger. I think it's kind of the replacement for Reckless Waif. Mm-hmm. It's a 1/1 for one with haste, with the normal werewolf claws. And when it flips, it becomes a 2/2 with menace, which I think is probably just better than the Reckless Waif, which is like a 3/1 or a 3/2. I can't remember. It's got 3 power,
yeah,
but it doesn't have any evasion. So, you know, a 2/2 with menace is, I think, going to be, get more damage in most of the time. And even be able to get in for that one damage, you know, I play, Swift Spear on turn one and just hit him for one sometimes. This does the same thing effectively. Mm-hmm. So, just okay. Another good red one drop that can do things.
Menace has been a very underrated mechanic, ever since it got its own keyword. Cause I think it was Goblin War Drums was its own card, right? Back in the day. Is that what the?
Yes, yeah, Goblin War Drums, and there's one in Dragon's Maze. It was an enchantment that did the same thing, but yeah, just the, mm-hmm. the has to be blocked by two effects.
And that's huge. And I mean, once again, like the evasion is, I think more than enough to make this card into most cubes. And on top of all of that, this was a Joy of Cubing spoiler card. So shouts out to, Jack and Cranny. Love their show. So yeah, this card is awesome. It made it in my list. You know, it's hilarious because I think as each set comes out, most people are, you know, wowed by the Planeswalkers. Of course, they're always sweet, but I'm always the guy who's like looking at like the Reclamation Sages, the Village Messengers, the like those like random low key cards that are so, so good. So I'm super glad we got a lot of those. But continuing on with red here, there's a 3-drop that I think got a little bit of heat from the community. People were kind of torn over it. But as it continued to see play and people started to test it, I think more people were impressed, and that is Sin Prodder. Costs 2 colorless and a red for a 3/2 with menace. And at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. Any opponent may have you put that card into your graveyard. If a player does, Sin Prodder deals damage to the player equal to the card's converted mana cost. Otherwise, put that card into your hand. So the debate is do you believe this is a Punisher card? Meaning that your opponent gets to choose, basically your opponent gets to choose what the effect is. So more often than not, they're going to choose the effect that's better for them.
It is and it isn't. Like I said, if they're at, you know, say they're at 4 and you have a lightning bolt on top. Yeah, they're going to take the 1 damage and put it in your graveyard. Mm-hmm. And people say they're always going to put lands in your graveyard. And yeah, they probably will, but that's not a bad thing because you still get to draw your card for your turn.
Yeah. This isn't a replacement for the draw step, which I think is
really big. Yeah. Everybody, I think some people were confused about that. It doesn't replace it. So, it's not like they can lock you out of lands or anything. And, now granted, like I said, if it's a 3 or 4 damage spell that costs 1 or 2, yeah, they'll probably take the 1 or 2 and put it in the bin. But then you're doing the damage without having to spend any mana, and you still get your draw step. So I think it's probably going to put in some good work. And then the 3-power menace for 3, it's definitely going to need to be answered, or it will kill you rather quickly.
Yep. I definitely am a big fan of this. What other red do you think here has popped up?
I'm not sure about the double red, Wolf Horror. It's a 2/2 with First Strike, which, you know, generally is pretty good. Ash Zealot saw play, but it also had haste. The thing is, this one's got Delirium. It's Scourge Wolf for, like I said, 2 red, 2/2. If you have Delirium, then it has Double Strike, which I don't know how often you're going to have that in red. I mean, obviously, you play a lot of instants and sorceries. Not a ton of enchantments, artifacts are going to end up in your yard, so you basically got a fetch land, creature's got to die, and then you got to cast two, an instant and a sorcery for it to get Double Strike. And who knows what turn this is going to be on by this point.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, at its base, it's a 2/2 first strike for two. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad card by any means, but I think it probably just gets outclassed. But if you do have a larger cube, you know, if you want, you know, the similar effects as something like Ash Zealot, this card's perfectly fine. Like, I would even play this and Ash Zealot in the same deck because they're both good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it, honestly, I didn't see a ton else that I wanted to try out. I think depending on the next set, how many werewolves get put in, and if they do finally give us the green black werewolf legendary creature lord or whatever it is, if they finally come out with that, then you might want to start going more like a werewolf tribal as a sub theme. That could be possible. Mm-hmm. You know, vampires getting there, especially with this set, and zombies is there from time to time depending on the cube. But yeah, that's something to look out for. But I think it's probably not quite there yet for some of these werewolf cards.
Mm-hmm. And we'll just—I just want to quickly go over the two mythics here. I don't think, unfortunately, that they're good enough. But some people I know have tested them out and tried them. And that the first one is Gold Knight Castigator, double red, two colorless for a 4/9, flying and haste. 4/9. That, you know, that kind of screams like what's going on here. If a source would deal damage to you, it deals double that damage to you instead. And if a source would deal damage to Gold Knight Castigator, it deals double that damage to Gold Knight Castigator instead as well. So the reason it has 9 toughness is, you know, they have to essentially deal, a creature has to have 4, or at least 5 power to kill it.
Yeah, it's essentially a 4/5 in combat.
Yeah. I think this card's okay. I'm just not a fan of, I don't think it necessarily replaces the 4 drops that you already have. And the double damage clause is, I think, too significant of a drawback.
Mm-hmm. At least it has haste. I mean, I guess it would have to be in red, and mm-hmm. being a 4-mana flyer, most of them do. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I can just see, you know, somebody untapping, like maybe a blue deck tapping this down and then just swinging in and just doing loads of damage out of nowhere. Just like keeping this on the board. Maybe it's got locked under some kind of enchantment that it can't, like, a Faith Fetters, you know, where it's still on the board, but it can't do anything. So, mm-hmm. that would be like the worst case scenario, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, that'd be kind of awkward.
Yeah. Yep.
The second mythic is Wolf of Devil's Breach. 3 colorless, 2 red for a 5/5. Whenever Wolf of Devil's Breach attacks, you may pay 1 colorless and a red. Discard a card. If you do, Wolf of Devil's Breach deals damage to target creature or planeswalker equal to the discarded card's converted mana cost. So I think the end of the conversation, unfortunately, is deals damage to target creature or planeswalker as opposed to player. So I'm playing a 5 drop and I have to sink 2 more mana into a card. I think it's...
And discard a card.
Yeah, and discard. I think it's probably asking a bit too much.
And it can't be a land. I mean, it's got to have mana cost to it. And,
it keeps getting worse for this guy.
Of course, expensive cards aren't the end-all be-all for what's playable. But to give you an idea, this card is less than $1.50 and it's been out a week and it's a mythic. So, yeah, that's probably not what you're going to be looking for in your red 5 drops. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that is the conclusion of red. Was there anything else in here?
No, I mean, there was a reprint, Fiery Temper, nothing really new. If we missed something, be sure and let us know down in the comments, but I think that's, you know, if you try out those cards, you'll probably be good.
Tormenting Voice did get a reprint, kind of cool art.
Yeah, the art's really cool. It's that whole painting coming out of the wall at you, so it's pretty creepy. A lot of creepy art in this set, so.
All right, so if you want to take us up here into black, what's going on here?
Black just got, I don't know, like three or four good two drops.
Yeah. Like, they heard our pleas for the past several years. They were like, all right, we're going to help them out, help out the cube community.
Okay. Of course, the flashy one's the mythic, but the one I want to talk about is actually an uncommon.
Yep.
It's the one I'm excited about, if nothing else, because it's got this real cool art with the negative space on the vampire's chest is a bat. It's kind of cool. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it out there like that. But anyway, it's Air Falkenwrath. It's one in a black for a 2/1, which is, you know, pretty base good stats. You know, that's at least what you're going to get out of it. But it's got an activated ability that costs no mana, can be done at instant speed, and it's discard a card, transform Air of Falkenwrath, activate this ability only once each turn. That doesn't really mean anything except for if you activate it, they respond to it. You can't activate it again in response to them.
Yeah.
Doing it. So, I mean.
Or you know, can't like discard your entire hand kind of thing. But that still doesn't mean anything.
not really. Cause like this isn't like a werewolf where it has a flip side that says it'll go back. Once you flip it, it turns into a 3/2 flyer and that's it. Like it just stays out there as a 3/2 flyer and beats face. And, you know, like I say, it's a discard outlet. You can do this on instep. I don't know. It's what I want to be doing.
Sorcery. Oh,
no,
wow.
It's just part of card.
That's pretty good. That's even better than I thought it was.
Yeah, there's no tap. It doesn't matter if it's got summoning sickness. It's just you play this. If you have a card in hand, you can discard it and flip it and it's good to go. So.
I've heard comparisons saying that this is the Black Delver, which I think is more the flip, the flying flip side, which brings it to that. But it's just kind of funny. I think this is probably a higher pick in draft than some of the rares.
I would think so. It's a very aggressive card. And, you know, you're talking about being the Black Delver. But the thing is, blue is going to have more instants and sorceries, so the clause for flipping Delver kind of makes more sense with them. Mm-hmm. You know, in black, all I want is a bunch of creatures and burn spells and kill spells and, you know, probably black, red, aggressive or black, green, you know, good stuff. But this, you can discard any card and it's, you know, it could be a land and all of a sudden you got a 3/2 flyer attacking.
Yep.
I don't know. This was the first card I wanted to try out when I saw the full spoiler.
Yep, I am right there with you. This is, like I was saying earlier, the uncommons and commons are the cards that I think get me the most excited for spoiler season, and this is by far the most exciting card of the set for me. It's just awesome. It's super efficient. And we actually we recorded the Black episode a couple weeks ago, but literally, I think a couple days right before I was going to release it, they started getting black. We started getting these spoilers, and I think this was one of the first cards spoiled, right?
This one and the mythic was kind of around the same time, but yeah, they were both like the first three or four black cards were just like, wow, that's probably going in cube or that can be tried out, you know? So
yeah, so for the black episode, we will be re-recording it just because black has had such a big impact on the color. I think this. Definitely changed and has better tools and is, I guess, more well-armed than it was a couple weeks ago. So I'm definitely looking forward to releasing that. And you know, once again, playing with Air of Falkenwrath, this card is insane. I didn't even know it wasn't that sorcery. Like, I'm even more excited to play this card in cube than I was like 10 minutes ago, and that's saying a lot.
and the thing is, you know, of course, we had Randy Bueller on last year talking about his tweaking of the cube, and he tried to go Vampire Tribal. If he had just waited until this set came out, it would have been insane. Like, I hope he tries it again because there's like easily 5 to 7 playable vampires in this set.
Oh, yeah.
I think it'd probably, you know, be something to look back on. Of course, you want to keep your Bloodlord of Vaskoth out of there and whatever the other, like the Necropolis Regent, the 5 and 6 drop ones. But, you know, there's some a lot better low end now. And I think that's something that can be done and have a black have a different identity. Than it's had previously. So, what was your favorite card besides this one?
I think the other black 2-drop is pretty good. That is Relentless Dead. It's double black for a 2/2 with menace. When Relentless Dead dies, you may pay 1 black. If you do, return it to its owner's hand. And when Relentless Dead dies, you may pay X. If you do, return another target zombie creature card from the If you do, return another target zombie creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this card just screams value. It's a two drop that has essentially three abilities. It's awesome. Although I think we actually want a couple more zombies, to make, you know, in cube, like mainstay zombies to put this card at its full potential, because obviously you're not going to be playing this in like a control deck or, you know, even really a white deck. But if we get, you know, over the next set and maybe, you know, as the years go on, it kind of reminds me of Stoneforge. This is one of the cards that only gets better just because it affects other cards in that same creature type. It is very strong. I'm going to try it out. I'm not sure if it's a permanent stay right now for me personally, but it is a card that I will have on my radar for a long time just because of the power level.
Yeah, it's, you know, like I always, people probably get tired of hearing it too, but I always talk about like, you know, your floor and your ceiling, like the worst case scenario and what's your top end on this? Like what's the best you're going to get out of it? And like you're saying, there's not enough zombies right now to get like this great, you know, gift at the end of the day where like you get to do all these cool things with the third ability, but the basement on it at a 2/2 for two as menace is pretty good. And there are a few cards that just randomly are zombies. Now I don't run Droll's Messenger. I tried it out for a while, but like you said, if a couple more zombies get picked up, you know, this goes in, Droll's Messenger, I'll probably bring it back in. Gray Merchant is randomly a zombie. Imagine getting to bring that guy back and with this guy, you know, and you can do both those abilities, you know, in the same turn.
Yeah.
Of course, if you activated both of them, Gray Merchant would go to the battlefield and he would go to your hand. But, you know, in a really solid black deck, it's going to be a lot of black pips out there. So
that recursion is still insane. And another thing about this card is it is a two drop 2/2 that can block.
Yeah, you're right. Like most of the black two drops and one drops with two power can't block or come into play tapped or both.
So yeah, so this guy, like I said, he, you know, is something that I definitely am going to keep in the on deck binder kind of thing. It's going to, you know, make it in my cube for this set, and I'm hoping maybe next set we'll get an Eldritch Moon, we'll get a bunch of sweet zombies, but definitely something to check out. So continuing on with black, do you have any other picks?
Actually another two drop. And I've been looking at, you know, the cube tutors, you know, it's a great resource for this kind of stuff. Everybody hasn't updated their list, but they kind of keep track of what's been put in by set. Mm-hmm. So you kind of see what everybody else is looking at. And it's actually the number one mythic rare that they have so far. It's actually ahead of Relentless Dead. It's called Asylum Visitor. It's one in a black for a 3/1 and it's a vampire. No, it's rare.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
It's a vampire wizard. Like I said, one in the black for 3/1 and it's got, you can cast it for a madness cost of one in the black, which pretty good value there. But the other ability is at the beginning of each player's upkeep. If that player has no cards in hand, you, draw a card and you lose life. So it's Phyrexian Arena, on a creature, but one of you has to be hellbent. Or if both of you are, then, you know, you can hit it both times, I guess. Although that'd be kind of hard to do. You hit it on your turn and then play the card and then hit it on their turn as well. But anyway, it's, you know, it's more card advantage. It's 3 power for 2 mana. And like I said, it's got madness cost in there. It is a vampire that I was talking about earlier. So there's just a lot of stuff going on just a real solid card.
Yeah, the card is insane. And we've got a couple cards recently that have kind of tried to occupy this space. Blood Scrivener comes to mind.
Painseer.
Of course, this isn't a replacement for Dark Confidant, but I think in certain decks, this card is actually better. Don't witch hunt me for saying that, but I think depending on the deck and depending on the situation, there are times the 3 power and the 1 life over the CMC life loss is pretty big.
Well, and you know, the difference between the really good black-based cube decks and the ones that just get crushed, honestly, are the ones that have interactive discard. if you have that Thoughtseize, if you have that Hymn to Turok, if you've got Liliana, you know, getting your opponent, they're trying to use resources to stop what you're doing, and then you're taking more out of their hand, you know, they can get hellbent pretty fast. And then all of a sudden you're just getting all the advantage. The one life for a card is, you know, just gravy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to be interested to play with this one. I haven't got to actually untap with it or anything yet, but it's another one I'm pretty excited about. Mm-hmm.
There is a black card that I think is pretty fun. And, you know, as I've started to kind of change my cube over time and start to see, you know, the sets come out and expect what to have and, you know, what cards kind of meet my standard. There's a card that I think everybody thought was a joke and probably still is a joke, but it's pretty fun. And that card is called Tristadecaphobia. 3 colorless and a black. Beginning of your upkeep, choose one. Each player with exactly 13 life loss. Or 13 life loses the game, then each player gains 1 life, and then you can also choose each player with exactly 13 life loses the game, and then each player loses 1 life. So this isn't the most competitive card. If you have a list, there's another card in this set that I'm going to talk about, you know, in a second, in another color. If you have the most, you know, cutthroat 360 powered list, this card's probably not going to make it. If you have a decent sized cube and you know your playgroup's maybe a little bit more casual and you just like having fun, this is pretty fun. This card seems sweet. I've seen it show up in draft, and you know people have dabbled with it and constructed. Strangely enough.
Yeah, I think it's the draft I went to, there was a draw one round because they were both on 13 life. So they both instantly lost the game. But yeah, it's. You know, black has a lot of ways of paying life and they have some life gain. So you have a little bit more control over your life total than some colors will. And, you know, worst case is it's like a really small etheric vortex. Like you're going to lose one and they're going to lose one every upkeep. Or, you know, if it gets to where that'd be bad for you, you can always y'all can always both gain a life. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think this goes well in black. Like you said, it is a really fun card. The art's really fun. There's 13s all over the picture and in the text box and everywhere. But, yeah, pretty cool card. I'm glad they made this one. Mm-hmm.
What else see here? There was one, there is one uncommon I've heard a little bit of buzz about. I don't know if it was in the actual set. That's Tooth Collector. Is it in the set? Is it in the...
It's uncommon. It was also in, I think, was it a dual deck that came out?
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was only... I didn't know if it was only in the dual deck or just, But anyway, 2 colorless for 1 black, 3-2. When Tooth Collector enters the battlefield, target creature an opponent controls gets -1/-1 until end of turn. And Delirium, the same clause. Target creature that player controls gets -1/-1. So you can essentially do it at every upkeep. Pardon me, I forgot to say that. But this is a fun card, not too crazy, but... In some slightly lower powered lists, I could definitely see this being a reasonable card to play.
You know, just it would wreck a deck that has a bunch of mana dorks or white weenie. If you as much as the 2/1s instead of the 2/2s, it would do some work. It's like I said, it's not a super powered card, but it's pretty solid.
Or even you can kill Phantasmal Image. It's kind of funny. You
can definitely do that. That's great.
Any other black cards that you want to talk about here?
Just real quick, the Olivia's Bloodsworn is basically Vampire Interloper with upside. It also can't block. It's a 2/1 flyer for 2, but it does have red target vampire gains haste until end of turn. Mm-hmm. So once again, that's more getting towards your tribal style deck, which may not quite be there for your cube, but like I said, it's a 2 power flyer for 2.
Mm-hmm.
Would be something to look at if you're trying to make your black more aggressive.
Mm-hmm. All right, so going on to blue, you should. Do you want to talk about this guy? I know you opened one of these in your last box opening.
Yes, I did. I actually opened up a regular and a full, so it kind of made the box, but it's the card everybody's trying to brew with in just about every format I've seen. It's a Thing in the Ice, which is 1 in a blue for an 0/4 horror defender. It comes into the battlefield with 4 ice counters on it, and it has whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you remove an ice counter. When they're all gone, you transform it, and it turns into Awoken Horror, which is a Kraken Horror, a 7/8, and when it transforms, return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hands. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff going on for just a little 2-mana blue card.
So I love this card. I think this card is insane. Well, actually, you talk about it first, then I'll say something.
Well, you know, when we talked about red, the Color Pie episode, we did do red already, and there's that archetype of spells matters, like with your Gutter Snipe or your Young Pyromancer, and even some more blue with like Delver, Talrand if you play him, you know, stuff like that. So this card does something that most of the blue mid-range control decks want to do, which it sits down as an 0/4. It can block. It's just real cheap. And just through the course of your natural game, eventually it's going to flip and be this huge 7/8 that like bounces everything else back to their hand. So you're probably going to get in for 7 with this thing at least once. I don't know. Just there's so much potential there. And you know, randomly Spellskite's a horror. There's just a few cards that have the horror creature type, or, you know, maybe they're changelings. Obviously, mm-hmm. that would work as well. But it also combos with Vampire Hexmage. You can just take the counters off of it. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of little things like that. But I think the card's probably something you want to try out in your blue section, because, you know, blue doesn't have just a ton of 2-drop creatures that do anything. And I think this one does a lot of what blue wants to do, or that deck wants to do. Mm-hmm.
So I'll say the argument against this card. This is probably the card that has the most, that has met the most contention in the cube community, among, you know, just basically whether or not it's going to be added, whether or not it's good. And a lot of people don't like the idea that it costs, that you have to pay it, play it as a 2-drop, and it costs 4 spells to get what you want out of it. And my experience with it is I've been able to draft it twice, and I played it as a 2-drop, and my opponent went, oh my gosh, I need to kill that Doomblade, or oh my gosh, I need to kill that Swords. Mm-hmm. So they just spent one of their premium removal spells on a 2-mana wall. Okay. Sure. That's fine. I'll play my, you know, whatever afterwards. The same thing with, okay, I have this 0/4 in my hand, I'm playing against Mono Red, I'll play it, you know, play an 0/4 wall, and they can't attack because they can't deal damage because there's an 0/4 wall. I had the opportunity to play this card with Snapcaster Mage and Restoration Angel, where I intentionally flipped it, bouncing Snap and Resto back to my hand so that I had an absurd amount of utility, because you can still flicker Awoken Horror with Resto if they use a removal spell on it to get your Resto back and dodge the spell and still have Snapcaster Mage available. The card is insane for 2-mana. I don't know. I think I understand why people may not like it. If you have the most tight-knit cube, you know, once again, if you have that 360-powered, fine-tuned, time vault, incredibly spiky list, it probably doesn't make it in. But more than anything, my playgroup has enjoyed it because it's been fun. It's one of those, I'm not going to say necessarily Timmy cards, but it's just like a really fun thing to have this, you know, you're slowly chipping away at it, just the same thing with Dark Depths, and you unveil this giant monster that has all this, all these abilities, and it's just a complete, it makes everything a complete mess. So I like this card. I think it's insane. I can understand some people maybe not playing it, but I do think you should try it out. Just proxy it up once and see, and actually make a conscious effort to play it in the best deck possible. And not every game is going to flip, but once again, and you know, we play plenty of 0/4 walls that do, that just draw a card and maybe make some mana, and I think the upside of this becoming a 7/8 is more than enough to warrant an include. If that made any sense.
I know exactly what you mean, and that's what I'm going to play it as. It's going to go in a lot of decks that I like to draft. So
it does nombo with Young Pyro, but it does combo with Snapcaster Mage and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. But anyway, moving on here, Blue has a Planeswalker. I know you also opened this in your recent box.
Actually, I picked that one up from somebody who just wanted to get rid of it. But, yeah, it's a great – I like it. It's Jace, Unraveler of Secrets. It's a 5-drop Jace, but it's expensive. 3/2 blue. Comes out with 5 loyalty, which is, you know, pretty good bit for 5 mana even. And the plus one, which will probably do most of the time is scry one then draw a card, which is a little bit better than just drawing a card. And that's what I like doing in blue. So already I'm pretty sold on it just with its plus one ability. Its other ones are minus two, return target creature to its owner's hand. That can be your creature. If you have something that has an enter the battlefield effect, you can bounce your own, bounce one of theirs, bounce their token, whatever. So yeah, I mean, the two abilities are very blue-like, very Jace-like. They go well together. And then the minus eight, which I don't think will really come up that much, but you get an emblem with whenever an opponent casts his or her first spell each turn, counter that spell.
So you get an Arayo. There was,
yeah, the Arayo from Kamigawa block, the flip enchantment that is so oppressive it's banned in EDH.
Broken
the format that says Soul Ring is okay, banned that card. So, you know, if this ultimate gets off, it's definitely, well, first of all, you've had a planeswalker out there for at least three turns unmolested, just ticking up. So you're probably in control anyway, but now they have to waste the spell to cast the spell that they want. And you've probably got a counter spell because you've been drawing and scrying your entire deck. Mm-hmm. So, the card's very well put together. Did I wish it was like four loyalty for four mana? Yeah, but pretty good.
I think it's probably one of the more balanced chases that we've seen. It's not, of course, it's not a replacement for Mind Sculpture. Like, no one is arguing that. No one's saying it's better than, you know, VP or anything like that. But if you have a cube environment that maybe you want to chop off that, you know, top layer, the top 1% of cards in terms of competitiveness and power level, I think this is a very suitable planeswalker. You know, this, AOT, they all do slightly different things, but they do them very well. And this is fairly efficient. It's not necessarily going to, it's not going to make my list, but it's not embarrassing by any means. I think it's fine. It's still going to win you games. It's still going to do what it needs to do. And it's pretty good. Like you were saying.
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to try it out. Of course, all planeswalkers get a pass to get tried out in the cube. The exception was Tybalt. He was just hot garbage from day one. But I've tried them all out. Some of them just get pulled, like, you know, Gideon, Champion of Justice, had a short run. But yeah, I usually try out all the planeswalkers just to see if they're playable in cube. And most of them hang around, some of them get replaced, but mm-hmm. Gonna definitely try this one out.
There is one uncommon that I want to talk about. It's not a cube card, but it is a callback to a card that I've been playing for years. That is a Baron Researcher. Three colorless and a blue for a flying 3/2, for a 3/2 flyer. Beginning of your upkeep, put the top card of your library into your graveyard. If it's an instant or sorcery, transform it, and you get a flying 5/4 perfected form. This is just a callback to Delver. The card is sweet. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to meet Nils Hom at GP Seattle and get some cards signed. He was really nice. German guy. He's really, you know, really fun guy in line, always making jokes, having fun. Card isn't, once again, you know, it's not playable, but I do appreciate these small kind of things they put into the sets. I don't know how competitive or how good this card is in, in limited or in constructed, but I just like the idea of them, you know, continuing to kind of, I guess.
Kind of grow the Delver.
Yeah.
Getting better as it goes. Of course, it does kind of blow the whistle on the fact that you should be paying four mana for your 3/3 flyer. Not one mana and then, you know, blind flip your ponder or blind flip your, you know, brainstorm. Like, oh, I guess I have a 3/2 flyer now. Thanks. But it should cost four mana. So there's no confusion.
Yeah. I definitely want to, I'm just going to get a foil one of these just to have in the collection, you know, try to get him to sign one again one day. But that is that. What else do we have in blue here?
There was a card that really just wrecked me. In one of the rounds I lost in the draft, and it's technically a two-color card, although you don't have to activate the activation cost on it, but it's one and a blue. It's called Ongoing Investigation. Enchantment. It says whenever one or more creatures you control deal combat damage to a player, investigate. Kind of reminds me of Edric a little bit, you know, like where they do damage, you just straight up draw a card with Edric. Mm-hmm. But this one, you get a clue token, which you can cash in for a card for two mana. It has another ability, one and a green, exile a creature card from your graveyard. you get to investigate and gain two life. So, it's got a lot of things going on. I don't think it's probably going to be strong enough, but like I said, it was just, it's just a nightmare when they landed that and just had a couple creatures out. And I'm like, well, you know, they were playing blue, white flyers. Couldn't even activate the green cost on it, but you know, they were just pinging away at me and just all of a sudden they kept getting these clue tokens, clue tokens, clue tokens. Then they just cash them all in one instant for like three cards. And I'm like, well, that was fun. I don't know how I'm coming back from that, but, yeah, it's I like the design space. Once again, I don't know if it's playable in most people's cubes, but it's, I like the design of it.
And let's actually take a moment to just talk about, some of the mechanics of the set. Of course, Delirium was one that is a, not necessarily a nod to Goethe, but kind of is in that similar design space and is kind of relevant to Flashback, not really. And the clues, but specifically, let's just talk about the clues because, you know, of course you get an artifact, which is important, like artifact themed decks, can use that apart from just drawing cards. You can, you know, do all kinds of sorts of things with cube, depending on the power level of the cube and have stuff like Duretti and so on and so forth. What do you think, how much is a clue worth? Is it worth a full card? Is it worth a mana, a half a mana? Is it worth, you know, is it worth the, you know, is drawing a card and sacrificing it worth the two mana?
It's worth more in the not blue cards that do it, like the green cards. I think there's some white ones that do it as well. But yeah, I mean, I'd say it's probably worth half a card. Cause yeah, you gotta put the two mana into it, but then that's just instant speed. Just whenever you don't use up all your mana one turn, say you're holding up a kill spell, they don't play anything, or you're just holding up a pump spell, but they don't target your guy, then you just, crack the clue at the end of the turn and draw a card. So, I think the setup cost is fairly low. I like it a lot better on creatures, obviously. That enchantment is, it's a cool card, but I don't like it. Probably a few too many hoops to jump through for that one. But, just putting, like you said, artifacts matter a lot. Like say, if I've got a couple clue tokens and I've got a Tezzeret, Agent Bolas out and I ultimate him, it counts those clue tokens. If I've got a Tinker, I can sack it to Tinker. Yep. You know, yep. These are things that are relevant, come up in my cube all the time, so.
Duretti, anything like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff.
Counts for Clarion Academy, like I said, Duretti.
Oh. Oh my goodness, yeah.
So, like I said, I definitely like it more on something like the Tireless Tracker and, a couple of the other cards, but, you know, I think if it's a solid card and somewhere on it, it has Investigate, it's probably worth trying out. Mm-hmm.
Okay, going into blue, there's one other card that I think is pretty good, and that is, I just saw it, Epiphany at the Drown Yard. Costs one blue and X. For an instant, reveal the top X cards plus one of your library and separate them into two piles. An opponent chooses one of those piles, put that pile into your hand and the other into the graveyard. So there are all kinds of effects like this in Magic, fact or fiction. What is Jace AOT's minus card?
It's like a mini fact, it's just like three cards.
Yeah.
Take a pile of the other goes on the bottom of your library.
Yeah.
Steam Augury.
That's, yeah, okay. There's Steam Augury. There's a couple different cards. The fact that this goes, that the cards go to the graveyard can be better or worse depending on, you know, the design parameters of your cube. I think this card's okay. It's pretty good. I don't think it's necessarily bad by any means. I'm not sure, once again, if it fits in that super tight list only because you can pay 4 mana for fact or fiction and, you know, several other cards that do a similar effect. But I don't, once again, I don't think it's embarrassing by any means. I would certainly play this card.
Yeah, I like it because it is scalable and the plus one really gets the rate correct. Like say, you know, fact fiction is 4 mana. If you pump 4 mana into this, you're flipping over 4 cards. You're probably going to make 2 card piles unless one of the cards is super strong. So in that case, it's pretty much going to be exactly like fact or fiction. They're going to give you the 2-card pile that they don't, you know, you sure don't get 2 cards out of it. Or like I said, if there's the really bomb card, then you're going to get the other 3 cards. So it's definitely a good card advantage. And like you said, it going in the graveyard, can, you know, have benefits in certain decks, especially with something like Snapcaster or, you know, Unbarrel Rites, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Any of these, like, Gifts, Intuition, Factor Fiction, any of those effects in which you get to, I mean, of course you get to tutor for those other two cards, but this card lets you make the piles yourself. So there's even mind games that you can play that often come up if you're, you know, playing with, like, in a real spiky environment that, you know, I'm going to put two lands and a mediocre spell over here and, you know, a really good spell over here, but I really want the lands. So I know, yeah. You know, you can set it up kind of thing like that. I really want the lands. I don't care about this good card. And the opponent would be like, oh, there's no way I'm giving him this card. Like, who cares about the lands? And in reality, you just needed the lands to, you know, hold up Force of Will or whatever it is.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And like I said, it's scalable. Like, if you just find yourself with 8 mana one turn, it's like, look, you get to look at 8 cards, and you're going to get 4 cards or 3 or 4 cards out of it.
Yep.
So it seems pretty decent. I wouldn't replace Factor Fiction by any means, but...
No.
Definitely worth looking at.
All right. I think that is it for blue. Is there anything out here? I don't think. No. All right. Let's go into white. White probably has the strongest card in the entire set.
I honestly think white is the strongest color in the set. Just in as far as like the uncommons and rares,
mm-hmm.
The commons are okay, but yeah, I think it's by far the deepest color.
So let's get the elephant out of the room here. The best card I'm going to say in the set is Archangel Avacyn. 3 colorless and 2 white for a 4-4, so Sarah Angel stats. Flash, Flying, Vigilance. So just that alone, we have a Sarah Angel that flashes in with... that has Flash, pardon me. I'm doing a terrible job of hyping this card up. when Archangel Avacyn enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain indestructible until end of turn. So you put it in, it's a combat trick. Oh, you know, this is, if you play Sarah Angel for nostalgia or whatever reasons, this is a strict upgrade. But wait, there's more. When a non-angel creature you control dies, transform Archangel Avacyn at the beginning of the next upkeep. And she transforms into Avacyn the Purifier, 6/5 flyer. When this creature transforms into Avacyn the Purifier, it deals 3 damage to each other creature and each opponent. What more do you want out of 5 mana? Like, honestly.
That's kind of the soft spot in a lot of cubes in white. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a ton of good 4 drops. There's a couple really good 6 and 7 drops. I think I run 3 5 drops currently. It's Archangel of Thune, Baneslayer, and Cloud Goat Ranger. Mm-hmm. And this card is pretty much better than all of them. I mean, you could have it make a case for Baneslayer. It's just a house. Like, just the blowout potential. Say they're tapping out for a Wrath, and you just go, nope, keep all my guys, thanks.
Yep.
Attack you for lethal. Or say you swing in, like you're kind of racing, you swing in, they don't have good blocks, so they just kind of let you go, and then they try and swing back, and then you just flash this in and eat their best creature.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, there's so many good things going on here. And yeah, if you flip it, you could kill some of your creatures, but you're probably killing most of theirs, and then you're doing 3 damage to them, and
have a 6/5 flyer.
Exactly. So, like you said, what more can you get out of 5 mana?
And the art is...
With Flash. Oh, the art's amazing. Which is the case for a lot of art in this set. But, very good art.
But like you said, with Flash.
Flash. I hear Flash makes things better, and it's true.
Yep.
And the other slight thing, dual face foils look amazing.
Really?
Yes.
In the new set? Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, Delver's, like, probably one of the prettiest foils I have in the entire cube.
Yeah.
Just, for some reason, the flip card, like, Huntmaster looks amazing. But this one I've seen a couple times. Somebody had some promos, and it looked really good. Can't wait to play with this one. I've got a promo coming in, and it's going straight in the cube.
Going back quickly to the 5 drop section in white. I play this card Archangel of Thune, Baneslayer, Cloud Goat, and Revelark. Revelark, of course, serves a entirely different purpose, and probably Cloud Goat too. I was testing out Archangel of Tithe for a while. The card's good, but like this card's absurd. Like, I wasn't cutting Baneslayer. There's no way, and I like Archangel of Thune because it's the only card that really has to deal with life in the entire cube, and I think life is, you know, it's pretty good, and there's all kinds of combos with, you know, of course, Kitchen Finks and, you know, small stuff like that. But yeah, this card is absurd. So there's not really much more to say about it. And I will be trying to get out of foil probably actually after the set rotates, but, you know, card's sweet. The next card in white is...
There's a couple of good ones, like I said. So.
Do you want to take this one?
Sure. One that I'm going to try that's just very innocuous looking, but it's Toppelgeist. Mm-hmm. It's the 1-mana, 1/1 flyer. It's a spirit. When it enters the battlefield, you tap target creature opponent controls. But it has delirium, and it's when the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if you have delirium, then you tap target creature that control. I'm not sure how it's going to work in cube. I have played it in limited, or, you know, just regular Shadows draft, but, it's pretty effective. Like, you know, a 1-mana, 1/1 flyer is very blah, but the possibility of being able to tap down their best guy on every one of their upkeeps, I don't know. I want to try it out and see how it goes.
Yeah, I know Usman was on this card for a while. The card is shouts out to the third power. This card's sick. I think it's really good. And it reminds me of, I was talking to the card shop, there are no movies that have ghosts that are kind of like just annoying. It just reminds me of an annoying ghost that like every turn he just comes up, he's like, boo. And that's it. Just taps your creature and then goes away. Because he's not really going to do anything other than keep one creature tapped down. So.
Well, I mean, he can hold a sword, so there's that.
He can hold a sword, which is pretty big. But yeah, I like him. The next white card I know a bunch of people are on that I'm, you know, testing out here is Declaration in Stone, 1 colorless, 1 white, for a sorcery. Exile target creature and all other creatures its controller controls with the same name as that creature. That player investigates for each non-token creature exiled this way. So, in reality, you're probably only going to ever investigate once in cube, because it's a singleton format. You could have, of course, all kinds of tokens or whatever, but you don't get to investigate for that. It's an exile effect that's pretty good. What do you think about this guy? I think it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, like I said, it's a token hoser, because then they don't even get to investigate. But, you know, it's just 2 mana to exile the biggest thing giving you problems. And yeah, they get a clue token, which is, like I said, maybe like half a card. To me, that's possibly better than Path, because, you know, Path ramps them. If it was instant, I'd be so excited, but it would probably be too good. Mm-hmm. Sorcery, it's still very, very good. I did open one in drafts, and it's, like I said, every game, occasionally, a player I played against, had the, it's a weird 3-1, like, flying, I forget the name of it.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't.
It's a 3-1 flyer that you can bring back from the graveyard if you discard cards. And he had 2 of those.
Oh, wow.
And so when he played the second one, I'm like, yep, we're going to exile both those guys, because they were just like, you know, 3-power flyers that just never die, or just kept coming back. So I was like, yeah, I got to get rid of those. And yeah, he got to investigate twice, but like I said, by the time he had enough mana to crack those and draw the cards, I was already beating him down with werewolves. So mm-hmm. I was fine with it.
All right. There's that the new legendary creature. What is his name? Odric, Lunark Marshal, 3 colorless and white for a legendary creature, human soldier, 3/3. Beginning of each combat, creatures you control gain first strike until end of turn if a creature you control has first strike. The same is true for flying, death touch, double strike, haste, Hexproof, Indestructible, Lifelink, Menace, Reach, Skulk, Trample, and Vigilance. So when I think about this card, I think it's more of, you know, why couldn't we just had more keywords? Like, why wasn't phasing on here?
Banding.
Yeah.
Judges need to riot, so that'd work. I played against this, and it wrecks you so hard. Like, you have to kill it, like, so fast, because the big one is flying. They've got one little 1/1 white spirit token, and all of a sudden, their entire team flies. And it happens the turn he comes out, and they play in pre-combat, and, like, you think you've got all these good blocks, and all of a sudden, his whole team just jumps up and kills you. Mm-hmm. So, I think the big problem is probably the mana cost and what the competition is. Mm-hmm. But card's good. Definitely trying to... Let's see. Oh, yeah, the wording. It does say each combat, so it also works on your opponent's combats.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's good. That's
big. I missed that the first time I read it through, and I'm like, oh, well, that's just not good at all, especially if they got somebody with vigilance. Like, they just crash into your face, and then they're all back on defense, you know, with all whatever keywords they have. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the fact that he's a 4-drop is probably not good for him. He is splashable. But I think it's almost like a combat trick. Like, you just play him pretty combat the turn that you want to just unexpectedly hit for a bunch of damage. Mm-hmm.
There is a 2-drop in this set. It's a callback to a callback to another set. It's Thalia's Lieutenant. 1 white, 1 colorless for a 1/1. When Thalia's Lieutenant enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on each human you control. This card is a human soldier. Whenever another human enters the battlefield under your control, put a 1/1 counter on Thalia's Lieutenant. So, what is it? A soldier, not soldier of the Pantheon, a champion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that same kind of guy. It's pretty good.
Cool. Actually, if you have soldier or you have champion out and you play this thing, champion gets 2 counters. Mm-hmm. So, and then every human you played after that would just be gross. So yeah, you do need to have some of the tribal support. Of course, I mean, in white, if they're not angels, the creatures probably are humans. There are occasionally ones that are just soldiers instead of human soldiers. But like even something like Eternal Witness triggers this guy. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, if you just, you know, have any humans out at all when you play it, get a couple counters and play at least one human after you play this, it's probably good enough.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was about to say, whenever you're done with this one, there's another 2-drop that I'll actually like as well.
Yeah. Go for it.
It's a flip card. It's Hanwir Militia Captain. It's a 2-mana 2/2. So once again, the floor is not too low, you know, solid numbers. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 4 or more creatures, you transform it, and it becomes Westville Cult Leader, and its power and toughness are equal to the number of creatures you control. And at the beginning of your end step, you put a white-black human cleric creature token on the battlefield. So it's a cheaper, newest version of the white army in a can creature. You know, generally, you're just going to be doing what you do in white. You're playing creatures out, you know, hoping you're not getting wrath, obviously. But, you know, you just play a couple creatures out, and all of a sudden you have 4, like, oh, flip this thing, and he's huge, and he starts making more tokens. So, mm-hmm. And from there, you know, it's kind of hard to deal with after that.
Yeah, I think this card's sweet. Mm-hmm. And also, it doesn't flip back, which is really nice.
Yep, there's no text on it for flipping back at all. So,
You know, if you're in that, if you have a... I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't know if it necessarily means that if you have a white weenie strategy, you should have this. But if you run more Anthem effects, this card, I think, is one of the prime creatures that you would want to play. Like, one of the prime examples of a creature you would kind of play because it continues to develop the board by itself.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in any deck that would play Lingering Souls or Spectral Procession or just any of the... You know, Brahmaz. Like, play this into Brahmaz. That seems pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah, especially you should be doing a normal thing that your deck wants to do, and all you're having to do is pay 2 mana up front for 2/2. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of meat and potatoes cards that make a good deck into a really, really good deck.
The next card, actually piggybacking off that, talking about anthems, the next card is Always Watching, one colorless and two white for an enchantment. Non-token creatures you control get +1/+1 and have vigilance. So I guess the real question is, where does this fit in the overall rankings of creature anthems? Because I think it's pretty good, but of course the non-token thing kind of can be awkward with, you know, cards like Hand of War, Militia Captain, or even, well, Bremos doesn't matter because they have vigilance anyway, but yeah, I don't know. Glorious Anthem is insane. There are just so many different things you can have. I'm not sure if there's, you know, a proper combination.
Yeah, because it's not just white creatures like, you know, like your Honor the Pure. Mm-hmm. It's obviously not token creatures like, what is it, Intangible Virtue, but not many people play that. But like you said, there's the Spear of Heliod. It's the same mana cost that pumps all your creatures +1, but doesn't give them vigilance. So I think if you play that card, I know that it has a different, has another ability where you can destroy a creature that did damage to you, but I'd probably just rather have this. So, if you play that card, which I don't know, a lot of people probably don't, but.
Yeah. I'm not sure which, I'd have to, unfortunately, I don't have all the answers, but I don't know which anthem I think would be the best, or like would be the ideal optimal build, but you know, there's so many out there you can, you know, pick and choose and tweak and see which ones you like. So this is, if anything, this is just a nice tool to have to the arsenal, or the, not the arsenal, but the toolbox.
Mm-hmm. So. The one white card that I didn't really pay attention to until I got to play with it is, it's an enchantment, which I generally don't like enchantments because you get 2-for-1 a lot of times, but this one kind of takes care of that. It's called Griff's Boon. It's a one mana, or it's one white for an enchantment aura, and it gives enchanted creature +1/+0 and flying. So one mana for a little power, but it also has flying. That's not great, but then it's got a second ability where it says 3 and a white, return it from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to target creature. You can only do that as a sorcery. So it's kind of like white Rancor instead of trample. And 2 power, it gives 1 power and fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's just a good value card.
Yeah. Seems good. And there's a couple tutors in here. Open the Armory. 2-mana tutor. Search your library for an aura or equipment. I don't know, you know, if this is necessarily what everybody wants, but if you have a cube that, you know, has more equipment or more auras, this is, I think, a perfectly reasonable card. And we'll probably see play in a lot of EDH decks from now on.
Yeah. Sometimes you need the sword of X and Y, and sometimes you need a face feather. So it's either one of them.
Yep. I think that is... Actually, no, pardon me. There is this card that I've seen a lot of buzz about. I just saw it. Well, I guess we should probably talk about the mythic first. Descend Upon the Sinful.
Yes.
4 colorless, 2 white for sorcery. Exile all creatures. And it also has Delirium. Put a 4/4 white angel creature token on the battlefield with flying. If there are 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard. So, it isn't a Wrath. It is a Wrath, but it's not a 4-mana Wrath of God. It's not as efficient. The Exile Clause can be huge, like killing a Blightsteel Colossus or, you know, something. This is the prime example anytime I think of exiling.
Ulamog, for example.
Ulamog, yep. Of course, I think anytime you play this, you're more often than not probably going to have Delirium. By the time, you know, if this is 6 mana, you're probably going to be wrathing either at turn 6 or even, you know, the later the game goes, the more likely it is that you're going to have the Delirium Clause. And being able to wrath and then have a follow-up is huge because, you know, when you think about wraths, it usually resets tempo, and when your opponent gets to play a creature right after that, it can be kind of awkward for you because now you can't hold up mana, you can't hold up, removal, of course, unless you have it the next turn. But having a blocker in play that's a 4/4 white angel with flying is nothing to scoff at. It's pretty good. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't know.
It's I kind of like it better than Terminus. I know you can miracle Terminus, but that never happens for me. Like, I can count on one hand the number of times I've miracle Terminus in my life, when I was able to cast it. So, you know, and like you said, if you can get Delirium, the 4/4 really makes the card. Be honest, I don't run a ton of Wraths right now. Actually, I think I cut Day of Judgment.
Yeah, I did too. Kind of wild. I don't think this card is good enough for the majority of cubes, but once again, it is an option if you have a lower powered cube and you want to tune your environment. Having a Wrath at 6 mana, that is probably a little bit more, it's probably a bit better across the board, is an option. Once again, another tool in the toolbox. It's going to become my, my go-to saying from now on.
I think there was one card for each of the two color pairs, in the set, one rare. There's a couple that really aren't worth talking about. There's a couple that I really like. So,
yeah,
are you done with?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, I guess we'll just go down what I consider the list of how they go. Azorius is Invocation of Saint Traft. Probably not good enough. It does give your creature the ability to throw out a 4/4 angel when it attacks, but it gives it no bump, in power toughness, and no evasion. So probably leave that one alone.
No Hexproof
especially. That's not real great. Although if you did put this on a Geist Saint Trap, you'd get 2 4/4 angels. Because, you know, win more. So, yeah.
That'd be pretty good.
Dimir would be the next one, and it was actually, I think, Tolarian Community College's preview card. It's Prized Amalgam. It's a zombie, which, you know, is a little bit closer to the having enough good zombies for stuff like Relentless Dead and stuff like that. It's 1 blue-black for a creature zombie 3/3. So it's 3 mana for a 3/3. Pretty decent, but it says whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if it entered from your graveyard or you cast it from your graveyard, return Prized Amalgam from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped at the beginning of the next end step. So, you know, if you're playing a reanimator deck, this thing's probably just going to keep coming back. And if you, even if you just cast it the one time as a 3/3 for 3, it's still pretty good. My Dimir section is super tight, so I'm probably not going to try this out until somebody tells me how bonkers it is.
Yeah, I agree.
The next color pair is Rakdos. You want to tell us about that one?
Sure. Rakdos Olivia, mobilized for war. 1 colorless, 1 black, and 1 red for a 3/3 flyer. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard a card. If you do, put a 1/1 counter on that creature. It gains haste until end of turn, and it becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. So, do you think this card is better than OG Olivia? I can't talk today. I don't know what's going on.
At what it does, actually, yeah, I think it is. It's definitely more of the top end of a really aggressive black-red deck. Whereas, you know, the other Olivia could go anything from mid-range to almost just a control deck, like a Grixis control deck. Like you might just wait till turn 6 to play it and have enough mana to ping something so it gets bigger. Whereas this one, you know, you always want to try and play it on turn 3. When you untap, you know, you can play any creature, probably pitch a land, and all of a sudden it's bigger and it has haste. So, I think for the deck it goes in, it's probably at least as good as the other Olivia. I've not played with it much, but the couple times I did get to cast it and attack with it, it was very good.
Yeah, the card seems really good, like you were saying. Top end of an aggressive strategy. And I was trying to think if there's any, like, strange vampire synergy. Of course, you can discard and enable Madness, and if you have the new one drop, it, you know, there's a combo there. But, yeah, I don't know. Interesting.
Let's see. The next thing I've got is Gruul, which is our next Planeswalker. Arlen Cord. Have you got to play with her any at all?
I've not been able to play with Arlen Cord yet.
I did get it cast against me. Little did my opponent know that I had Grisboon in hand, so I got to untap, get my guy flying, and kill it. But card's pretty scary. It's two, a red and a green for a three loyalty planeswalker. It's plus one is until end of turn, up to one target creature gets plus two, gains vigilance and haste. It's zero ability on the front side. It's a flip planeswalker, by the way. A zero ability is put a 2/2 green wolf token on the battlefield and then transform her, into Arlen embraced by the moon. And she keeps whatever loyalty she had. You don't get to activate the backside of it that turn. But its abilities on the back are plus one creatures you control get plus one and gain trample until end of turn. So kind of like a mini overrun, that you get to use, you know, just right away. Not even, you don't have to build up and minus it. It's a plus. So you can probably use it multiple times. I think it's a minus one is she deals three damage to target creature or player. And then you flip her back to the other side, the Arlen Court side. Mm-hmm. Or minus six, you get an emblem with creatures you control have haste and tap. This creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player. So a lot of stuff going on here.
A lot of abilities.
So the ultimate is, you know, you're going to have to plus it, at least three times, but you're going to have to zero it one time to flip her. So it's at least four turns away. So the ultimate's not very likely. But like I said, it does, like, sometimes you just want to give your guys vigilance, pump them, or one of your guys, and then you kind of crack in there and it's still on defense to protect her. Or you can pump a wolf out to protect her and then flip her over to the other side. So the next turn, you can either kill something or, like I said, mini overrun. Card's pretty solid. Like I said, it's, something I think Gruul needed. Of course, they just had two planeswalkers printed in the last couple of years, but I don't know, I think this one fits a different role. I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. I think it's, for everything that you were just saying, I think it's efficient at what it does. It's pretty good. I currently play Domri, and I think that they're not even really that comparable. Domri lets you fight and draw cards, but this card lets you, like, once again, that overrun strategy, like, overrun with a bunch of sapperlings or, you know, even just, like, a bunch of big dumb idiots is pretty good.
And yeah, then, even just like the wolf tokens that you make. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the first side, the plus one is insane. Vigilance and haste and plus two. That can lead to a lot of awkward combat situations in which your opponent did not expect. And once again, you know, the being able to flip back and forth, I think, is pretty interesting. I know White Wolf was a little critical of this card because he said that the plus abilities always seem to be on the wrong side. And I guess that makes sense. I think, though, that it's encouraged that you want to be able to flip back and forth because you have to plus three times and transform it at least two ulti. It's good, though. I think the card's good. I'm not sure. Once again, I don't know what order you would rank them in. I think Arlen Court is probably better than Xenagos only because it has so many different abilities. But in certain decks, Xenagos can produce like 8 mana in one turn.
Yeah.
Domri can draw you the card that you need. So it depends. I'm going to be testing this card out. I may, you know, I usually don't run two Planeswalkers per guild. And I do in Izzet, but I think I'm going to probably try this guy out. Well, sorry, pardon me, this woman out and Domri. So we'll see. Card is sweet.
What's the next one? Selesnya?
Yeah. Won't
take long. Not as good as the other Sigarda?
Yeah.
But,
it's okay. If you get it in draft, you probably won, but in cube, I think not so good.
Yeah, Ben, the real quick, Sigarda, Heron's Grace, same as the old Sigarda, 3 green white, but it's a 4/5 flying. It says you and humans you control have hexproof, but she doesn't, which is really weird.
And be sacrificed.
Yep, and the sacrifice clause is gone. But it does say for 2 mana, exile a card from your graveyard. Doesn't matter what card it is, exile a card, and you put a 1/1 human soldier token on the battlefield. So, you know, mid game. If this card is left unkilled, even if it's not attacking, you know, you can potentially be making 2 or 3 1/1s a turn, as long as you have some stuff in your graveyard.
Yeah.
But, like I said, that being said, not as good as the Sigarda, and not as good as a lot of the green white cards I have in my cube. So anyway, on to Orzhov. If you want to talk about the third planeswalker.
Yeah. That is Sorin the Grim Nemesis, 4 colorless, 1 white, 1 black, for a total of 6 mana for a 6 loyalty planeswalker. So, all right. Talking big numbers here. +1, reveal the top card of your library, put that card into your hand. Each opponent loses life equal to its converted mana cost. So, kind of like a Bob.
Yeah, but if Bob was a vampire and decided, like, I'm not going to take the damage, you take the damage. I'm good with it.
The second ability is -X. Sorin Grim Nemesis deals X damage to a creature or planeswalker, and you gain X life. So not, you know, pretty good. That's a very efficient thing, the life drain, or drain life. I don't know exactly what card it is, but very good. It can put you in really good situations. Of course, this reminds me a lot of, I was able to play this with Archangel of Thune, and I just -1, I gained life, and my team got huge, and that was it. Like, I didn't even need to draw cards. Like, all right, well, we won. Anyway, -9, put a number of 1/1 black vampire knight creature tokens with lifelink onto the battlefield equal to the highest life total among all players. So a nice nod to EDH, the way they worded this. Yeah, this guy's good. I think he's good. He's a little big on the mana side, but I think he's powerful enough to play.
Yeah, I think the +1 is going to be very interesting. It's going to depend a lot on how you build your deck. You know, if he's like in a more of a controlling deck, if he's in more of a controlling deck, you know, it's going to be some pretty big cards you're flipping over and just doing massive damage while ticking up. Like, you know, say they've got 4 power in play, you play this guy, you tick him up to 7 and dome him for like 5. Like, say you just, I don't know, rip Baneslayer off the top or whatever. So it's, you know, drawing cards and possibly just killing them just by drawing cards.
Yep.
So
I will not lie though. I'm kind of pissed that they made him Orzhov. Like, it's the third one. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, it's just when he's based around the Innistrad story and trying to find out stuff about that because of, you know, since he created Avacyn, who's a white angel or was. I think that's just kind of the part of him. And it's, honestly, it's kind of Orzhov abilities. It's like, I'm going to get something and you're going to pay for it. So.
Yeah, it is true. We're going to get our Liliana of the Veil 2.0 one day. Getting that crazy black planeswalker one day.
So if you were going to get a Lily and she was 2 color, what would her second color be?
I want to say black white, but I could see black red.
I was thinking black blue, just because she
black
deals
blue would be sweet.
Well, because she deals with zombies, and you know that's one of the other main zombie colors is blue. Yeah. At least on Innistrad it is. I don't know. I think she'll probably be one of those that's always one color. But, you know, you got a Johnny was just white. And then, oh, by the way, he's been just about every color since then.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to another Liliana someday. Or just a reprint of the good one.
I think we're getting her next set. Maybe not a reprint. I don't think we're getting a reprint. I think we're getting the reprint in Eternal Masters. I think we're getting a new good Liliana next set. She better be good.
I'm hearing that there's, is it 2 or 3 planeswalkers in the next set? They talked about it. I've heard it's either 2 or 3. And I haven't heard if Tameo's just like pulling an Ugin and just being like kind of in the background of the story, but not actually getting a card this set.
Yeah.
Like Ugin was in battle. But I would really love another Tameo, like maybe even a 4-drop Tameo. That'd be pretty cool.
I think she may be blue black. You can see that.
That'd be interesting.
But yeah. Anyway, there is actually one other Orzhov card that's pretty sick.
Yeah, I did notice that there's a second one that's pretty good. I was pretty lucky on my draft. I opened up Declaration of Stone and this card, which I splashed for in my green light deck. So yeah.
So what does this card do?
It's Anguished Unmaking. It's one colorless, white and a black. So basically Vindicate mana, instant speed, exile target non-land permanent. You lose 3 life. So they took the best things of Vindicate and Utter End and kind of smashed them together and said you can lose 3 life. And you can't stone rain them. But pretty good.
Yeah,
it's good.
I like this card better than Utter End. I cut this for Utter End. Of course it's not better than Vindicate, but no one's saying that. But I don't know. I like this better than Utter End. I don't think the 3 life loss is that big of a deal, and I think the one less mana can be pretty big.
Yeah, I definitely like the cheaper cost and just paying a little life. Because if I'm in white-black, like I said, life link or life gain is going to be available to me at some point.
And they made a full art promo of this, so I'm even happier.
Gotta love the full art promos.
Actually, just going back to Sorin really quickly, I don't know if I had to run one Sorin, which one would you play? Because black-white always seems like tokens, because Sorin with Bitter Blossom or Lingering Souls or anything like that is absurd. Like, either Solemn Visitor or Lord of Innistrad. This guy isn't.
No, he's definitely not a token Anthem type guy. To be honest, like, I originally thought when they spoiled Solemn Visitor, I was like, oh, I still like Lord of Innistrad. It's got to be better. But the more I play with Solemn Visitor, it's just better. Because it's got that clause of, like, they get bigger with lifelink until your next turn.
Oh, yeah.
Play defense. With that. And, you know, sometimes you have vigilance on your guys, sometimes you don't. It doesn't matter. But just the life swings and just the extra power. And then also the token he makes is flying, whereas the one the Lord of Innistrad makes is a 1-1 on the ground with lifelink. So, now granted, the ultimate on Lord of Innistrad is the best of any of the Sorins. Mm-hmm. Even original Sorin.
What does it do again? I can't remember.
It destroys up to 3 target creatures or planeswalkers.
Oh, and you take
it back on your side.
Yeah.
And the reason I have a soft spot for that is I got to my opponent one time had out a Johnny Vengeant, Liliana, and Sorin, Lord of Innistrad, and I have in my hand Zealous Conscripts, and he kept picking up Sorin. I'm like, nope, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that, and he got him up to where I could ult, so I cast Zealous Conscript, took a Sorin, ultimate, popped Liliana, a Johnny, and like a token, and I get a Johnny and Liliana back and get to activate them, and I had a Zealous Conscript with haste. It was the best day ever for MotoCube.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so I'm going to try this one out for sure. But, you know, gun to my head, I'd probably say Solemn Visitor's probably the best one for most of your, you know, tokeny strategies.
Yeah, I think Solemn Visitor is going to be the one that stays. This card's sweet, but mm-hmm. 6 mana is a bit much, and I kind of am big on trying to keep guilds somewhat organized. I don't want one guild to have an absurd amount of cards, and honestly, I'm not sure if this guy's worth cutting one of the other guild cards for, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, honestly, I'll probably cut something like what is it? The Archon that exiles things when it comes in.
From Theros.
From Theros.
I can't think of the name.
Ashen Rider. Because I mean, yeah, it's really good. It's a super strong card, but like every time somebody builds a reanimator, they don't even put it in there. They put in like, you know, Gristlebrand and Nulamog and stuff like that. I'm like, okay.
I play Obsidot because I think that card's still stupid good.
Still very stupid, yes. Just be able to do the shenanigans with Whip of Erebos is worth having that card in there.
Yeah. So that is that. Anyway, let's move on here.
Okay, so we got Golgari has the EDH flavor of the week in the Gitrog Monster, which is 3, a black and a green for a 6/6 legendary creature, Frog Horror. So he does not get bounced to the Thingonize. Just saying. He's a horror.
Yep.
He's got Death Touch. Okay. At the beginning of your upkeep, you sacrifice either the Gitrog Monster or land. But it says you may play an additional land on each of your turns, and whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card. So that's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. Basically, it's saying you're getting a 6-6 for 5 with Death Touch, and each upkeep, you're going to sack a land, but when you do, you're drawing a card, and you can play two lands a turn. Yeah. I'm sure I'll draft some kind of Jund or Junt list at some point that this guy just goes nuts in.
Just imagine Crucible with fetch lands with this card. Like, oh my god.
Just draw your entire deck and just, like, say it's a 6-6 for 5. Yeah. I'm going to take a look at my Golgari section. I really haven't to see what I might cut for this guy. Like I said, he's really more of an EDH card, but
I mean, it's fun.
6-6 for 5 does things. It draws cards and it's got Death Touch, so it says it can attack me.
Yeah, if you play the Titania kind of style decks, if you play, Loam, of course, is insane with this card.
Titania is like Crucible, Loam, any of the, sack lands that destroy stuff, Wasteland, Strip Mine, all that stuff.
I think this card even fits into a Pox strategy fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
I've been experimenting with Pox in my cube, and I think it's pretty good.
Can you imagine going Braids into this card? That's just, you're drawing all the cards and you're having to sack stuff, but you're still drawing cards for everything you sack, and you get to play more lands and just get way ahead. So
I don't have room for this card, but I think this is a card that I'm definitely going to try out. He's awesome. He seems really fun to play. And you know, if I ever, right now I'm not supporting that Titania strategy, but if I ever want to bring that package in, I think this card is definitely an auto include if you're trying out that strategy. Quick comment on Golgari. I have been so impressed with Marin of Clan Niltoth. First of all, that card is like almost borderline broken in EDH, or at least from the decks that I've played against.
Mm-hmm.
And
like just out of the box too.
Yeah. You add maybe like 5 cards to the standalone box product, and it's like almost tier 1. But no, Marin of Clan Niltoth. Even I think Reed, or not Reed, no, it's Paolo Vitor Dharma De Rosa did a legendary cube draft on CFB recently, and he played it, and he was like, "This card just seems absurd. Like, this is, can I play this in standard? This is broken." And I've played it, and it's awesome. So anyone out there, I think this card is insane. It's so good. I mean, every turn you're always getting value regardless of what's happening. And the experience counters stay with you permanently. So even if this card goes away and you recur it or something, you don't have to rebuild. You know, there's no 1/1 counters on this creature or something like that. It's just absurd. And it's a 3/4 for 4, which is, has pretty respectable stats. And then quickly, actually, did you read the daily MTG article about the Gitrog monster?
Actually, I'm on that one next. Like, I had to catch up all the way through, like, Zendikar and all of that. But, yeah, I'm actually still got to read that one about the Gitrog monster. It's supposed to be really good. So.
It's really good. I liked it a lot. If you enjoy, some nice fantasy stuff, I think they paint the picture very well.
And let's see. So Golgari was there. Oh, Simic, which is one of my favorite color combinations. Mm-hmm. The card for Simic is interesting. It's called Altered Ego, which is one of the more unusual clone type effects.
Mm-hmm.
It's X2 blue green for a shapeshifter, and the key is it can't be countered, which is pretty cool. It says you may have it enter the battlefield as copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it enters with X additional +1/+1 counters. So you're getting the best creature plus some, and it can't be countered. So I don't know that I'll put this in my Simic section, but I'm sure this will have some good stories behind it for the people that do play it.
Yeah. The one thing about this card that I think some people overlook is that you can just pay 4 mana to get an unencounterable clone. Like, it's mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you don't have to do anything else. Card's okay. I don't have room for it. I don't have room in Simic not cutting my Shardless Agent. So,
have you picked up your Judge Foil yet, sir?
Not yet. Soon. soon. I will make a big deal about it when I do.
my judge friend said he just got his pack in, for whatever, and, but it didn't have it in it. It had like a command beacon and, a wasteland and stuff like that. But he said the next pack they get should have the, Charlotte's agent and I think temporal manipulation.
Yeah.
It's like the portal time walk or time warp.
Yeah.
5 minutes. But yeah, looking forward to getting the Charlotte's.
I will. Definitely. Favorite card ever made. So it's going in. We'll get it. Anyway, I think that's, oh no, pardon me. No, there is one more fairly important card in Boros that we haven't talked about. If you want to bring this one.
It is Nahiri the Harbinger. It's, the same amount of cost as a Johnny Vengeance. So it's got a lot to live up to. It's a red and a white, Planeswalker Nahiri, and it says, +2, you may discard a card. If you do, draw a card. So rummaging is what they refer to that as. -2, exile target enchantment, tapped artifact, or tapped creature. The tapped part is meh.
It's a little, but,
yeah, it's a little weird, but you know, at the end of the day, like you're probably getting rid of something that's annoying you because it's already attacked you, or maybe they just played a Gilded Lotus and then tapped it for something and played something else, and you're just like, exile that thing. And exile is, you know, going to be relevant some amount of the time. Oh, and I say she comes in on 4 loyalty. So if you plus her twice, you'll be at 8. And it says search your library for an artifact or creature card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. It gains haste. Return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So there's a lot of stuff you could do with that. Just having the card draw slash selection in Boros seems pretty good. Being able to randomly get rid of something that's annoying you, also good. The ultimate, while it may not come up very often, you know, if you get to do that, you can go get either Ulamog or Kozilek or whatever Eldrazi you have in there, put it into play. It gains haste, so you get like whatever triggers you got going on there, and then the battlefield triggers, and then you put it back in your hand, and you can recast it. So.
It's good. I think the card's good. I don't think I have room for it, unfortunately.
Well, I don't adhere to such strict, guild laws and whatnot. I try to keep them all fairly even as far as number of cards, but, you know, as far as planeswalkers or not planeswalkers, I'm not so strict because, like, I could not pick between Ashiok and Tezzeret, Agent of Bullets. And if I gotta do that for Dimir, you know, I give everybody the chance. Yeah. So. I'm definitely not
going to Johnny. I'm guilty sure. of my own laws, but
but I'm gonna try her out. You know, there's definitely a Boros card I can cut for it somewhere, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But
I've been trying to look for a replacement for Reckoner, but I don't think this is. I've been looking for a replacement for Reckoner for a while now, but I don't think this is the one.
Well, I've been trying that that 5 mana angel. That gets like +3/+3 if your life total, if your
oh, yeah.
life total is half. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, but nobody seems to play it that much. So I'm probably just gonna cut that and tie this in.
All right. I think that's the conclusion of multicolor here. Now we're gonna get into colorless. There weren't too many artifacts, if any, I think. So I think we'll just skip over those and get into the lands. Is that okay?
Yeah, like, there's really no artifacts. There's a couple cheaper equipment that do weird things, but there's enough good equipment out there. You probably don't really mess with those.
Shard of Broken Glass has really cool art, and Magnifying Glass is really creepy.
Yeah. There's Skeleton Key, which gives things Skulk, which is very annoying, by the way.
But there
are a couple really good lands, though.
Yeah, so the new rare land cycle, Port Town, Choked Estuary for Boding Ruins, Foreboding Ruins, Game Trail, Fortified Village. It's a new land cycle that enters the battlefield and you reveal a basic land. Oh no, it's not basic land. A plains or island card from your hand, or like the respective colors, basic land types from your hand. And if you don't, enters the battlefield tapped. Mm-hmm. So I don't think this is that crazy. I think it's probably like the sixth or seventh land cycle that you would include into a cube. It isn't too much more utility over anything else, I think.
I mean, I like it better than the Battle for Zendikar dual lands.
Okay.
I don't run the fast lands from Scars, although they're pretty much similar. Like, if you do run those, you may want to run these instead or something, because they're very good in your two-color allied aggro decks. Like, yeah. Your black-red, for example, is a deck that would want this, because you want to be able to possibly have red or black on turn one. Now, the bringing it in untapped seems pretty easy to do, especially limited, because you're going to have a bunch of basics in your deck, or possibly, like, you know, a shock or dual land. But, you know, end of the day, like, if you just really need more fixing, these are pretty good, and they'll be around, so they'll be easy to get.
Mm-hmm. Then there's a new uncommon life cycle for those uncommon cubes out there. I'm sorry, uncommon land cycle, pardon me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was about to say, they're just worse than the gain one life, but they're not as weird as the Gilgates, so, yeah. The other one that I'm thinking about trying is, well, there's two, but the one that most people may not think about is Dronyard Temple.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got to play with it?
I haven't, but it seems very good in any deck that would play Gitrog Monster or Titania.
Mm-hmm. Or just any kind of, not self-mill, but, you know, graveyard style deck where you're putting stuff in the graveyard, because it's tap for colorless, or you can pay three of any color, return it from the graveyard to the battlefield tapped. That does not count as your land for the turn. So if you find some way to get in the yard and then, you know, have three extra mana lying around, you get to put it, like, kind of rampant growth you somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one land that everybody's talking about. It's pretty good. You want to tell us what that one is?
Yeah, that is West Vale Abbey. It taps to add a colorless mana to your mana pool. You can pay five, tap it, and one life to put a 1/1 white and black human cleric creature token onto the battlefield. You can also pay five mana and tap it to sacrifice five creatures, to transform West Vale Abbey, then untap it. And it turns into Ormendal Profane Prince, a 9/7 flying lifelink, indestructible with haste. Flavor text, with Grizzlebrand gone, the Skurzdag eagerly awaited another demon to claim their devotion. Ormendal did not make them wait long. I like that flavor text a lot for some reason. But yeah, it turns into a giant flying big guy that will kill you very fast.
And when you say giant, I love the art, because on one side it shows like this, you know, castle style estate looking thing, pretty big, you know, building. And then it shows the demon in front of it, and pretty much as big as the building.
Yeah.
So he's huge. Which, you know, 9/7, all those little keywords.
Sky, I guess you should be there. Brand for breakfast.
Yep. You know, flavor wise, the Giraffe's Masterpiece, which probably nobody will run in their cube, but he used parts of Grizzlebrand to make that.
Really?
Saw that. If you look in the picture, like, he's got the hook arms and wings.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
What is the story? Do you know what the story is for Grizzlebrand?
Like, Liliana just smacked him down and killed him.
Oh, okay.
Because she owed him whatever contract of all the, you know, she went to, like, what was it, five demons? And owed favors to them to help her stay young and have her power and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But then when she got the chain veil, she started going around just, you know, knocking him off the list. Mm-hmm. And he was not a match for her when she has the chain veil.
Okay. I was hoping for a Grizzlebrand in the next set, but that's okay. Crushed my hopes.
No, he did.
Right, yeah, I think this card's cool. I mean, it's one of the few, one of the many utility lands we have. You can, you know, there's all kinds of stuff you can run. I think this is, you know, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit slower. I think, you know, if you're playing in a powered environment, it may not, you know, work, or it may be a little bit too slow, but that's not saying much, because that just means that there are like 15 cards in all of Magic that are better.
I think it was limited resources they were talking about it for limited, obviously, but they're talking about, like, you know, you just put this in any deck, you know, you usually have room for one colorless land, and it has utility, just making guys, and some number of games that you play it, you'll get to activate it, and a large percentage of those games you will win.
Mm-hmm.
Some games you'll play it, not come close to activating it, and it won't decide the game either way. Mm. So, the setup cost is very low, and the upside is huge.
Yep.
Because, you know, lifelinking, non-power, hasty, indestructible things are good, I hear. Oh, and flying. can't leave out all the keywords.
Yep. But, all right, I think that is the conclusion here of our set review. Did we miss much? I don't think we missed anything.
No, we talked about all the ones that people should probably try, and some they probably don't need to, but we cut down on the filler this time. That was good.
Yeah. I remember Theros Block, and we spent like 30 minutes talking about Heart of the Scales.
Yeah, that card's weird, though, man, because it looks like it'd be so good, and it's just not for Cube, really. It took, what, a year and a half for it to get used in Standard, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know.
But yeah, overall, unique effects. Sorry, go ahead.
I said unique effects like that, you know, sometimes they make you think, like, this should be good, but I can't figure out how it is and why it's not. So, mm-hmm. Did you have do you have it right now, whether you've played with it or not, like a favorite card out of all the colors, all the whatever?
Probably Thing in the Ice. I mean, I love the, you know, the, Heir of the Falcon Wrath is probably first, it's probably second, like a very, very close second, because it looks so cool and it's super efficient, but I had so much fun playing Thing of the Ice, bouncing. Like, as soon as I got to bounce the Snapcaster and the rest, I was like, oh, this game's so done. Like, this card's so good. it's just cool. And what about you?
I'm gonna probably just say Arlen. I don't know. It's just, I like the Flip Walkers. It's in the decks that I do play that have green and red. Of course, they normally have blue in them. Because they're going to be, you know, some kind of, gotta play blue. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, it has so many things it does. It's got five abilities, and I don't know, yeah. I kind of like that toolbox Planeswalker. Nice. So, yeah, probably that one. And Westfall Abbey is probably a close second just because it goes in any deck. Just mm-hmm. Any deck can draft this and play it.
Black and red, I think, got huge boosts in terms of aggressive strategies from this set. Like, I think the colors actually, are significantly better than they were. And not just like a little bit better, but significantly better than they were a couple of weeks before the set released. With that said, black is still missing the, you know, Liliana 2.0. We need that Mind Sculptor-esque broken black Planeswalker. We'll get it one day. We'll get it.
I thought that was Liliana the Veil.
Yeah, but we need another one.
Okay.
So we need one to compare to Jace Friend's Prodigy. How about that?
That's fair. Alright. Well, we will try and re-record the black episode, sometime soon. But yeah, we definitely want to go over this first. And, that way it'd be a more current picture of black in Cube. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think, that is it. Do you have any, closing thoughts here? I think, do you have any pickups you're hoping to get in terms of the Cube pimpage or craziness? I know that, Cube Vault, at some point in time, I had called Murray maybe like a month or two ago just to see what the status update was. But I think they're going to be, you know, they're hopefully at the beginning of this month or next month, they're trying to put out new Cube Vaults, like a new wave and new redesign and stuff. So definitely stay tuned. Of course, I'm sure you'll hear about it everywhere in terms of the Cube community, but I'm definitely looking forward to that because I need a new box. So the box I have right now is either two binders that I just stuff everything into or one of those white Rokown boxes that are like not appropriate for thousands of dollars of value.
Okay. I'm going to try and not this sound not as douchey as it's going to sound, but you know, the little price function on CubeTutor.
Yeah.
Well, I added the time walk to it. Okay. And I picked up some foils and da 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 and I actually clicked it. And I know it's like, you know, TCG mid for near mint and like my revised duels aren't on near mint and my moat beat. Or not beat, but it's played. But the number was like 18 something.
Yeah.
And I got my cards in a return to Ravnica gift box. So, if you listen to this, you need to get your vault out there. I'm going to do a video on YouTube, you know, probably shouting about how great it is. So I just need one. Need one now. But, yeah, I've actually, if anybody wants to check out my YouTube channel, I should have another pickup video coming up pretty soon. I've got a really sweet card coming next week. Almost as sweet as Time Walk, not quite, but, pretty close. At least it's almost as rare. But yeah.
That's crazy. I'm just looking forward to, of course, playing this set, and I'm super happy. I know that there's, I know Tellurian Community College did have a video on like the premium deck boxes and cases and boxes that you can use. There's like one that's a humidor and of course the Aaron Kane wood deck boxes that you can make and all kinds of stuff like that. So there are, you know, resources out there, but I'm saying that to put a little bit of pressure on Murray. Maybe we can get this cube vault out soon. but anything, I've had videos planned forever. I'm hoping to get some out. I have like three, like 90% done. And I'm just too lazy to finish. But at some point in time, I will be back to YouTube. But until then, you can find me on Twitter at Zakeel Gordon. And you can find Drew on Twitter.
You can find me at Quad Nines, all spelled out. Or on YouTube, it's Quad the number 9S. So either one of those. You can find me on there and talk about magic.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening. Of course, definitely leave comments. All comments appreciated. You can tweet it at us, respond to the Reddit post, respond to the MTG cast comments or MTG Salvation or whatever it is. We'll hope to hear from you soon. So for What's in the Box, this is Zakeel and Drew, and we'll see you guys next time.